This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 189 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, April 22nd, 2015. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. Marcus,
hello.
What up, my main man?
Well, not a whole lot. There's a lot of WordPress news coming around. Got a great guest for today's show, and wanted to also say that we've been actually listed again as one of the ultimate lists in the ultimate list of WordPress podcasts. So we'd like to thank David Gray for updating that list. I guess there's now 21 different things in the list, and I have three of them. So.
Oh, well, fancy you.
Yeah, I now control 1/7 of the WordPress podcasting ecosphere. Just getting up there.
And you even control the website that sort of aggregates them all with WPRFM.
That's correct. That is correct.
Man. Sounds like you got a little monopoly going on here.
I'm trying, you know. I'm not Matt yet, but I will be the Matt of podcasts very soon.
So just a quick brief announcement before we get into our conversation tonight with our special guest. Last Wednesday night, I had told everybody that tickets for Orange County, WordCamp Orange County, were on sale. And the next day, I checked around noon. I think there was like 6 left, but they're all gone by now. They're way gone. So if you didn't get a chance to buy your ticket to WordCamp Orange County, I'm not sure if they have a waiting list available, but I definitely keep an eye out on maybe like the Advanced WordPress Facebook group or on Twitter, because a lot of times people will give up their ticket. So I'd keep tabs on that if you want to go. But other than that, that's it. They're all gone.
Yeah,
just,
I need to start
just as we predicted.
I want to start like a StubHub of WordCamps. Wouldn't that be great? Like,
you're going to be outside the venue. Get your ticket.
Yeah. StubPress. Here we go.
Oh, man, I don't know if that's ever happened before. I actually have seen a Craigslist ad posting for one of the WordCamps out east, and they were asking for like $100 or something for their WordCamp ticket. I don't know if they ever had a purchaser, but that was a first.
Wow. That's pretty interesting.
So I don't know. There might be a hidden business in there. Anyways, so we got a lot to talk about tonight. As we said last Wednesday, today might have been the day that WordPress 4.2 would be released. It's not. Instead, there's a 4.2 RC4, Release Candidate 4. But the cool thing about that is we have the person in charge who's responsible for the release of WordPress and officially pushing it out. And we're going to talk to him. We're going to find out why it's not available tonight and why he can't announce it on our show. So before we get to that, Marcus, do you want to read off our little cheat sheet bio we have for Mr. Drew James?
Yes, Drew James is the release lead for the new WordPress. He is a WordPress core committer, contributing developer, and community evangelist. He also works as a web engineer at 10Up. Drew James, welcome to the show.
And, well, it would help if you unmuted yourself.
Yeah. Good thing there's no mute button in WordPress.
Unless he dropped off here. I don't know.
And I'm back.
Hey! That was a heck of a long intro.
I told you. I got kicked out right in the middle of it.
Oh, man, so much suspense.
I talked like so glowingly about your bio, too.
I heard like half of it.
So, Drew, thanks a lot for taking some time on your very busy schedule for coming on WordPress Weekly. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So let's, this is one of the first questions we always ask our guest is, it's a question on the WordPress.org forum profiles, is what is your WordPress origin story?
My origin story? About 7 or 8 years ago, I was working at my college newspaper, and we were redoing the website in WordPress, and I didn't know anything about WordPress. I just knew that the guy who was building it was doing a terrible job. So I kind of took over and redesigned our newspaper website, and then I've sort of been doing WordPress ever since.
Awesome. So there's no, did you, throughout that time period, did you come across any other CMSs like PostNew, PHPNew, Joomla, Drupal, or was it just straight WordPress once you got a hold of it?
It's just straight WordPress. I've messed around with Joomla over the years. I shudder a little bit every time I have to use it. I messed with Drupal too. I messed with Concrete 5 and a few others. But WordPress has always sort of been at the top of the list.
So we got you. You're leading the release of the WordPress 4.2 development cycle, but and that's a pretty high honor from what I've seen and the other people I've talked to who have been in that position. But sort of what is the path you took to sort of get into that position? Because maybe we have listeners out there who are maybe looking to lead a release of WordPress or at least get more involved with contributing to the project at its core.
Right. Well, and you know, I was honored to be asked. Actually, 4.2 is the 10th release that I've contributed to. So I started off as just a regular old core contributor. I think my first bug was some JavaScript thing, and I had no idea what I was doing. I just like copied code from another place in the file, and it seemed to work, and I submitted it as a patch.
And who asked you when the call came in?
You mean for release lead?
Yeah. How did the call come in? Were you like, this is a joke?
Well, I had heard some rumblings before, probably a couple of weeks before they chose the 4.2 lead. I think probably Andrew Nason just messaged me and said, you know, hey, how'd you like to run a release?
Tag, you're it, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, when you were sort of got in and you were publishing your fixing your first bug and you got involved with Track, did you find Track intimidating, or were you scared of it or scared to go through the process even though you didn't know what you were doing at the time?
You know, it's funny. I've been thinking about that a little bit recently, and it's actually, I don't know. I don't remember. I just remember it being really clunky. Like, you know, Track, first impression of Track usually is that it's really clunky. And, yeah, I mean, I think in a way, it was actually simpler then, which would have been, I think I started contributing about 4 years ago. So it was simpler then, but still complicated. You know, it was, you upload a patch and then you just sort of hope that somebody comes along and gives you feedback. I think I probably lurked on Track for 6 months before I did anything.
And for our listeners out there who may be new or don't understand what these terms are, describe what WordPress Track is.
WordPress Track is the bug tracker for WordPress Core. It's, how technical do you want me to get? It's Python software that runs the bug tracker for WordPress Core.
And it's a system set up in such a way to where developers can write patches, which are what? Div files or PHP files or anything. It gets uploaded to, throughout the system. And how does that describe sort of that process between somebody submitting a patch and how it gets approved and maybe merged into Core so it counts as a contribution?
Right. Well, the first thing they need to do is they need to set up a local environment running, you know, like the equivalent of WordPress trunk. And there's actually a Core Contributor Handbook on the make.wordpress.org/core blog. There's a Core Contributor Handbook that was, until very recently, maintained by our dear friend Kim Parcell.
The late Kim Parcell.
And then, so you get set up on the local development site, and then you figure out what's wrong. You know, a lot of people will go through the process of finding, like, good first bugs, which is just a report of tickets that are sort of flagged for new contributors on Track. And once they find one that they think they can fix, this is, like, essentially the only time that it's really kosher to hack Core, quote-unquote, right? Because you're hacking Core, generating a diff file, and then uploading it to the Track ticket, basically.
So as we could see, there is a learning curve here. I mean, you can't just sometimes we tell people, you know, go to Track, find a bug. But, I mean, even for me, so just sort of a short story here, my first sort of real good contribution to Core through Track, I found a typo in the description of a default theme that was shipping with the WordPress 4.1. And I had mentioned this typo to somebody, and they said, well, why don't you write a patch for it? I said, I don't know how. So they said, well, I'll help you through it. So I created the core change, labeled what I needed to do, and they actually helped create the file, which I guess was a diff or something, that was able to, whatever patch file had to get uploaded to be approved. And they helped me through that, the experience. Ever since that experience, I'm now not so afraid. I'm not intimidated by track as I used to be. See, when I, as someone who doesn't venture there often, I can sometimes, you know, A, it's intimidation, but B, I don't want to screw something up to where the regulars there who maintain track, you know, get upset with me and say, "What are you doing? Don't be an idiot! Stop it!" You know, you're.
Well, to be honest, you know, to be honest, I don't think that's really what happened. I mean, I think we're at a point now where the barrier to contributing to WordPress is as low as it's ever been. You know, we're using Slack now, which is amazing. For all the contributor teams are using one Slack instance, which is in and of itself amazing because you can basically contact almost anyone in the WordPress community, in the WordPress contributor community, I should say. But, you know, it used to be incredibly intimidating. People would have to go into IRC. They would have to figure out what IRC was first in a lot of cases. Then they'd go into IRC and they'd be in a room full of 300 people, you know, and they don't know anyone there. And so they just like throw it out there and say, "Hey, I'd like to work on whatever," and then hope somebody answers them, right? And nowadays, I think, at least within the core team and a lot of the other teams, we've sort of adopted a very welcoming attitude, you know, to new contributors. So it's, I think it's a lot less of, you know, you're not going to get yelled at on track. In fact, we now have features, some features built into track, like when a new contributor submits a ticket, at the bottom of the page, it actually shows us how many, like, you know, you should make sure to welcome this person to track because it's their first ticket, or it's their second ticket, or their third ticket. I think it goes up to like 3 or 4 or 5 or something.
Yeah, but, yeah. I was gonna say I've seen that message quite a few times on there, and that's one of my favorite features of track, to say, "Hey, this is their first contribution. Let's welcome them. Let's, you know, thank them." Absolutely. You know, that's pretty cool. Just those little changes like that can make, could do a lot to stem away that intimidation factor.
Sure.
And now with the ability of Slack, which is a real-time communication platform, Slack HQ, if our listeners want to go out there and check it out, you sort of, if you go into Slack and you go into the core channel, all you have to do is like bring up a ticket number, or you can ask a core developer in there, or just say, "Hey, can anybody take a look at this ticket with me," or explain what to do, and no, look, to me, at least from what I've seen, developers will almost stop what they're doing, depending on what it is they're doing, and help them out. And you have sort of this ongoing real-time mentorship program going on.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, and it's, I think it's honestly, it has completely changed the way that we welcome contributors in and the way that we collaborate. I mean, there's a lot of people that say that Slack is basically glorified IRC, right? But it's just, honestly, in a lot of ways, so much easier to use than IRC in terms of, for new people, it's a lot easier for them to figure out. The upside is that you're right. I mean, even if somebody stumbles into, like, the core channel right in the middle of a dev chat, somebody will probably kindly, you know, let them know that there's a meeting going on right now, but I can almost guarantee you that someone will ping them directly and say, "Hey, hit me up after the chat at whatever time and I'll help you out."
So how has that led to the advancement of WordPress? Is it faster now? Is it more efficient now? Is it just because we have this additional enhanced communication tool?
I think the answer is yes to all of those things.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, it's funny. I think about even just, I think, what, 6 months ago? So, or maybe 8 months ago? Let's see, I think they announced Slack at WordCamp San Francisco, right?
Yes, they did.
So, I mean, it's even hard to believe how we managed to communicate this well before using Slack. I mean, I cannot say enough good things about Slack. It's just, the biggest thing for me is, you know, is being able to ping almost any contributor on any team, you know, like almost instantly. And even if they're not online, I can leave them a message and it might send them an email, right, with a notification. I mean, that's amazing. It used to be that if someone wasn't in IRC, then you had to go track them down on Twitter and send them a DM or something, you know, send them an email. It was just slower. Like, it's so much faster now. Amazing.
And Slack has a really good app on iOS. They finally have come out with a desktop, Windows desktop version of their app. So, I mean, I really appreciate being in bed at midnight, getting a slight notification from Drew about, you know, the status of WordPress 4.2. It's been amazing.
Do you think that Slack would be a good communication tool for just not even in the WordPress sphere as far as core, but for plugin developers and theme developers to use to talk to the people that are using it?
Well, yes and no. You know, I think in terms of, I don't know how well it would work in terms of like a support tool, if that's what you're talking about. Like, for instance, even in WordPress, we're still using IRC for support. We're not, you know, our Slack instance is strictly for the contributor teams. I mean, I suppose you could use it in the same way that you use, like, in our IRC channel. But already, I mean, I know there's tons of people that are on Slack that are in, like, multiple teams at the same time, right? So, like, I'm in four teams right now, all at once. I invented this game that I like to call Slack-a-mole.
Yes, that's you better trademark that.
Where people are in different rooms, and I'm constantly jumping between teams. I mean, I think absolutely. One of the teams is actually really new. I just created it for, I'm the lead organizer for WordCamp Denver, and we're using Slack to coordinate our organizer communication.
Awesome. I bet you that's got to work a lot better than snail mail.
Well, we've actually been using a planning blog on WordPress.com for a while, and that's actually worked pretty well, but it's nice to have sort of a real-time way to, you know, communicate instead of, I mean, there's a lot of people that would argue that a P2 blog or an O2 blog or whatever is quote-unquote real-time, but it's not really. I mean, it's not like chatting with someone.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. So you work as a web engineer at 10Up, and I know that Matt has come out, you know, it wasn't too long after one of the work camps he attended where he came out with this post called Five for the Future, talking about how companies maybe should look back at somehow, not really, you know, maybe set a goal, it's not required, but maybe a goal of maybe giving 5% back to the project that they're making their bread and butter on. And you work at 10Up, and you're leading a release cycle, development cycle of WordPress. So, I mean, obviously 10Up is paying you to do that. They must be fine with that, or else you wouldn't be doing it, right?
Yeah, they're actually donating 100% of my time during the release cycle.
So they said the heck with 5%. Let's do 100.
Well, you know, I was on about a 50-50 split before this release. And that's probably what I'll go back to, is about a 50-50 split.
And before leading a development cycle of WordPress, you were actually really knee-deep into improving the inline documentation for WordPress, correct?
Yes. Which something, by the way, doesn't go away. I've discovered. I've actually continued to maintain that while doing the release, but just on a much, you know, a much less active basis.
So how much stress? I mean, starting the release cycle, they did the nominations, the voting. You came out on top. You were selected. I mean, at that point when you were selected to do it, I wonder what were your emotions like? Did you feel excited, and has that excitement gone with you through this release, or has it become more and more stressful? How have you dealt with the emotions and the overall progress of going through this cycle?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost, it's been a challenge just in terms of not really having any kind of structured project management experience coming into this, which, by the way, at this point, I have to throw a shout-out to Sam Sidler. He's sort of the man behind the curtain a lot on WordPress, in WordPress contributor teams. He's like the, I don't know, I think he's the project manager technically at Audrey Capital, right?
Yes.
He's amazing. So, I mean, coming into this with no project management experience, it's amazing to have someone like Sam to use as a resource, right? So I think initially coming in, obviously I was very excited, you know, because you have this feeling like, oh, I'm going to be able to get to do all the things that I've always wanted to do, right? Especially this being my 10th release. So I've seen a few releases, and I've seen the things that work and the things that don't. And as we've gone through, you know, I've found that staying organized actually reduces a lot of the stress. And it's really not necessarily, I wouldn't say that I've been incredibly stressed so much as just working a great deal, right? So I've probably been averaging, I don't know, probably another 10 hours a week maybe working on this than I would normally. So it's more work, but I really like it. So I don't really see it as being stressful. And even as we've come sort of to the close of the release cycle, I found that it's I think, you know, at this point, the biggest problem at the end of any release cycle is sort of the activity drop off that you see. So it's really exciting as we get closer and closer to the release because activity's picking back up again.
So I want to talk about the release.
Go ahead.
So can you give the listeners kind of just an overview of some of the things that are going to be included in this next release as far as improvements and enhancements, and perhaps even share maybe some of the most fun parts of it that you worked on?
Well, that's a pretty loaded question. It's I think from sort of a generic standpoint, it's very much improving the things that we already have, right? There's not much that's going in that's incredibly new. I mean, other than like Unicode 7 support and I don't know.
Say the word. Say emoji.
Well, shiny updates. I mean, I'm not going to say. Well, you know, the thing about emoji is that it's only one part of the whole UTF-8 MB4 thing. It's
right.
Obviously, it's the most visible in terms of people who use emoji or whatever, but it's much bigger than that. But I think generally speaking, the overarching theme is improving the things that we already have in as many ways as we can. So, like, for instance, we've had a real heavy focus on mobile flow coming from Ryan Boren as the new UX lead. We've had a real focus on accessibility. And so we've been testing more and more things from that perspective, right? Of now when we test something for inclusion, we have to test, you know, mobile, we have to test accessibility, we have to test all the different browsers and all the different platforms. And yes, it becomes more things to test, but it's in the end, we're improving the experience for more people. So I think that's really the broad thing you're looking for is, you know, improving the things we already have. And I know that a lot of people consider that to be kind of yawn-worthy when I started, but I think we've really made a lot of progress. So, I mean, in terms of the features, you know, the headline features are things like revamping Press This, which a lot of people don't even know, didn't even know existed before this release, I think. Obviously, integrating the theme switcher into the customizer, which is a huge win in terms of sort of just consolidating stuff into the customizer. All of the Unicode support stuff, and then we have things like shiny updates, which I'm pretty bummed that we had to strip so much out of that. I think that was probably my favorite feature. I may be getting into a little hot water saying that's my favorite feature, but that was my favorite feature.
We'll get into that. What is that, and why would what's to come? I guess what would be your ultimate vision for that?
For the shiny update stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's just backtrack a little bit. So the shiny updates is basically the ability to update plugins in line from various UIs, right? So from the new plugins search form, for instance, you could install plugins from there before, but you know you had to sort of go through this whole process where you click the button and then it redirects and then it gives you some feedback and then you click the link and then you get back and you have to start over, and it was sort of really clunky if you wanted to install, you know, more than one plugin and stuff. And it's still kind of, that's still there. I mean, we still had to sort of stick with that just because we had to strip so much stuff out just to get anything into 4.2. I think where, you know, ideally we see that going to covering everything. We see that covering updates and installs for themes and plugins and core and translations, right? Because it's just, it's funny how these little things crop up as sort of feature plugins or proposals from people, and you go, oh, you know, I never really thought about it that way, but it's really easy to use like this, right? It used to be, Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say shiny updates and shiny installs. I was testing a beta version of WordPress as it was being developed. And it's like, I remember clicking the install button, not knowing that this was a feature that was added to the to WordPress. And I clicked on it and I said, you know, I'm thinking to myself, what just happened there? Aren't I supposed to see something? So I clicked on it again. I stared at the install button. And, like, instantly it said install. And I said, wow, you know, this is one of those things that I didn't know I wanted until you put it in here, and this is really nice.
Uh-huh. You know, and then we ended up having to pull a lot of it out because it was just not ready, and there were a lot of sort of edge cases and figuring out the flow of how to activate plugins and stuff. Just hadn't really been given it enough time and enough sort of consideration. So, you know, we wanted to still ship with some of it, so we stripped it down to what we thought we could absolutely be sure of and then sort of punted the rest, which is, again, it was that was my favorite feature. So I'm pretty bummed that we had to strip so much out.
Not only that, but you had to strip so much of it out pretty late in the dev cycle, which normally that stuff doesn't happen.
Well, and I'm glad we managed, I mean, it sounds terrible saying it this way, but I'm glad we managed to do it before beta, right? Because, you know, I think I mentioned a little bit ago that sort of one of the excitements of running your own release is that you get to do things the way you want to do them. And my big thing was, you know, that the deadlines are not arbitrary. You know, that beta literally means the end of when you start introducing stuff. So if it wasn't ready, it needed to just go because it needed to get out of the way. And that's what we did. We punted it, almost all of it, right before beta 1.
Well, at least we have shiny updates to hold us over.
That's right. We have shiny updates to hold us over.
And so can you let us in on the inside as to what the name is of this one?
I absolutely cannot.
Damn. Because we've had a debate here on the show.
Oh, no.
With different names.
Yeah, I heard your debate. You definitely didn't guess any of them.
Darn.
I'll give you a clue. There's a first name and a last name.
Yeah. Oh, let me guess. It has something to do with jazz, too.
And it has something to do with jazz. And here is a legitimate clue. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. All
right. We're using the person's last name.
Hmm.
Oh, and there's a reason. Now, are you ready? This is the rest of the clue. And there's a reason why we're using the person's last name.
Hmm. I still have no clue.
Is this a different reason than why all the other last names are used?
Yes, this was. It's because I nixed the first name.
We'll get to that later. You're trying to be a politician here. I think that's what I'm getting here.
But I have think a feeling even that when Matt, I have a feeling that when Matt chose this person, that he had it in mind to use the last name anyway. So that's as far as I'm going to go. You'll find out tomorrow, though.
Oh,
that's the way it always goes.
That's right.
All right.
And speaking of WordPress 4.2, as you just alluded to, you're expecting it to ship tomorrow, huh?
We are. You know, I was pretty bummed that we didn't hit our April 22 date, but then again, we didn't really anticipating having a point release a day before release, you know, and it really is the smart move to push it back a day to the 23rd, which, I mean, being off by a day is not, I consider that a win.
Well, you, so know, what they, still you people, know what they say, deadlines are not arbitrary.
Yeah. Are there still people right now, as we speak, on the 22nd, just freaking out, trying to get code out?
Well, I suppose, you know. I mean, we're in freeze on 4.2, so we tagged RC4 during dev chat today, and we're frozen now until tomorrow.
You know, I've been noticing as an observer, when you get to these release candidate stages, and I'm just observing what's going on in the channel, which is interesting in and of itself to see how this stuff comes into play, and it seems like a mad frenzy. Oh, look, we just found this, and that looks sort of okay, and it's already patched. Let's put it in there. I mean, it seems a bit like a mad frenzy here at the end.
Well, sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. I mean, the frenzy, I think, the frenzy that you're seeing is, I don't think it was really a frenzy. I think it's more a careful, we're taking a careful look at anything that gets reported. Because at this stage, you know, it's going to be either something inconsequential that can get punted or something that's really important, right? And we have sort of standards for how we go about tagging things like RC1, for instance. The rule for RC1 is that you have to hit 0 tickets against the major milestone before you can tag RC1. So what happened was, you know, we initially missed the RC1 date, and then as there were like 3 or 4 tickets or whatever sitting on the report, people were like reporting new stuff. So not only were we dealing with trying to clear the 3 tickets that were on there, but then there were like more tickets coming in. And we're like, come on, guys, we got to get to 0 before we can tag it. So it's like, you're like, just, you know, please just wait until we tag RC1 to report this.
It's like trying to leave work early and close the shop, and everybody keeps back in.
Well, and so like I told you we tagged RC4 today during Dev Chat, and our goal today was that we had to get back down to, you know, there's 3 tickets that are sitting on the report that are not, they're like not blockers. You know, there are things that we're going to resolve tomorrow right before release. You know, things like the about page, moving a script to the CDN, and, you know, like one other ticket. I think it's related to bundle themes. So those are in, you know, tickets that have no real bearing on the release other than that we'll finish them at the last minute. So we had to basically clear anything that had been reported since RC3, you know, before we could tag RC4 and freeze. That's what the frenzy was today.
Oh, okay. And, you know, one of the coolest things in terms of observing a release that's getting ready to happen, I enjoy sitting in the core channel on Slack, and it's like watching the preparation of a rocket that's about to be blasted off into space. You know, there's this countdown, there's this checklist, which behind the scenes, I don't know, must be a mile long, but you have all these coordinators, like you're working at NASA, working together. Are you excited to go through that whole process and eventually push your code out to millions of WordPress sites out there?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny you bring up this idea of behind the scenes, because in WordPress Core, there isn't really a behind the scenes. I mean, anything we're doing is in the chat, right? And that's honestly one of the things I really like about WordPress, is that we've essentially open sourced our organization and communication. For the most part. I mean, it's not to say that some things don't happen in private. Like, obviously, the security team doesn't meet in public. But I think that, honestly, this idea that you could just ship code to millions of people is amazing. You know, like, and this whole idea of, you know, when we push out point releases, that they can update 6 million sites in one day or 10 million sites in one day is insane. It's just insane. So it's, you know, it's funny, because after you release something like a major release of WordPress, you know, you sit there and you watch the download counter just go up by like 50, 100, you know, 300, 500 at a time. It's amazing to watch the counter go up and just think, wow, you know, something that I wrote is running on millions of sites all over the world.
That's awesome. And it's like seconds after you push it out, you're already, it's like there's millions of just super hungry WordPress servers, you know, servers that want the newest version of WordPress. And if they can get it, they get it. Because within seconds of you pushing a release out, you're already up to 1,000 sites updated. And the next thing you know, it's 5,000. It's crazy to see how fast it goes.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's funny. It goes out, and I guess the best way of putting it is it goes out like wildfire, right? It's like we're just building the fire all the way up until the last minute, and then it just spreads like wildfire.
And so what do you have planned now that the release is tomorrow and this will be finally off your plate? Vacation, going out to the bars, hanging out, you're going to drop this line on girls now, what's going on?
You know, I don't really get much of a break. I mean, I do a little bit, but I'm not taking a vacation. Next week, TenUp has their all-hands meetup, so I'm actually headed to that.
Yeah.
What a lot of people jokingly refer to as WordCamp TenUp. Is, you know, 110 TenUpers or whatever, all converging on one city for 4 days or 5 days or whatever.
Nice. Where's that going to be?
I think it's in Boulder, so it's 30-40 minute drive from my house, which is not my favorite travel arrangement, but whatever. I'm really looking forward to that, seeing a lot of people and meeting a lot of people that I work with. And then after that, it's back to, you know, development. So I'm not really taking time off. It's pretty much just going back to what I was doing before.
So one of the luxuries I don't think you had, that two of the next elite developers have is being chosen ahead of time, knowing ahead of time, and maybe having a week or two to sort of plan out your focuses and what you're going to work on, and maybe, you know, go through the feature plugins list and see what's going on over there and come up with this game plan. You know, as someone who has just gone through the cycle of leading the dev cycle of WordPress, what sort of benefits do you see for Konstantin Oberlin and after him, Scott Taylor, who already know ahead of time that they're going to be leading those versions of WordPress, both 4.3 and 4.4?
Sorry, I skipped out in the middle of that. I heard, you know, just paraphrase it for me.
What benefits to the WordPress project and development cycle will Konstantin Oberlin and Scott Taylor have knowing way ahead of time that they're going to be leading those versions of WordPress, a luxury that you didn't have?
You know, I think it helps that they bring a lot of experience to the table, right? You know, Konstantin Oberlin's been contributing for quite a while, as has Scott Taylor. Obviously, he's a core developer. So I think having advance notice is going to be immensely helpful in terms of being able to actually plan out sort of and roadmap a release. You know, whatever feature plugins are ready, those are going to get rolled in, and you just have to kind of go with it. You know, you decide sort of how you're going to structure that and what's going to go in and what can't go in for whatever reason. But I think in terms of having advance notice, it really allows them to, I mean, plan to make a roadmap and to actually say, you know, this is what I want to do and this is who I want to do it. And to actually get sort of those commitments in advance from people, you know, from saying, hey, I know you're interested in working on this. Would you like to focus on this for 4.3 or 4.4? I think having that sort of advance notice would have been immensely helpful to me, because I would have been able to say, like, for instance, to the accessibility team, hey, I'd like to really tackle this, this, and this. Who's going to be the point person, you know? Which we eventually got. We actually eventually got to that point, but I was definitely behind by a couple of weeks. I think, just generally speaking, we're going to see a much sort of well-orchestrated effort happening now that we're actually announcing release leads in advance. I think it's an amazing thing, and I think it's something that we need to keep doing.
And so when you get in charge of one of these releases, and you develop the roadmap and things, do you get to kind of pick what it is that you want in the features as far as the luxuries and versus the necessities, and then it gets approved up the chain? Or what's the hierarchy of that?
Well, all right, so generally speaking, the release lead has the final say on what goes in or doesn't go in. But on that same token, you don't really decide... I don't know a good way to put it. You don't really decide, like, what goes in. You know, you're not really directing, you know, you will work on this and you will work on this. It's more like you're shepherding, right? A lot of cases you're shepherding efforts and trying to make sure that everyone's talking to everyone and everyone's in the loop on what's going on and aware of sort of what their milestones need to be and what their goals need to be. So, I mean, it really is, in the truest sense of the word, a project manager, right? You're not necessarily directing what people are working on, but you're trying to help them stay on track with what they're working on.
So you don't really get to decide what features will be inclusive within the update. It's really just the flow of the improvement of the features.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about strictly feature plugins, you do. I mean, you get to... It's because part of it, you need to sort of weigh... resource management, right? So you're saying, you know, they have the feature plugins meeting, which happens every release, and you sort of gauge which ones seem to be ready and which ones aren't. And honestly, it really comes down to sort of resource management, right? So you have to figure out what can we feasibly get done within our timeline, whatever that is. So yeah, you don't in a way you don't really get to choose the features that you're weighing, but you get to sort of choose which of those would be feasible within your timeline, right? Hmm. So in this case, we had like the menus and the customizer project from Nick Halsey that we opted to punt to a later release, like 4.3. And part of that was just because Nick was already running another feature. He was also the feature lead for the theme switcher and the customizer. So we didn't really want him to run two at once. But it was also just in a sense of, would we have enough people to test and patch and work on and devote time to, you know, say three feature plugins instead of two. So in the case of feature plugins, you sort of have to, you do have a say on what feature plugins say would get merged in, but you also have to kind of weigh it in a diplomatic way because, you know, people have put a lot of effort and time into these things and you can't stand in the way of progress, right? I don't know. I think that's the best way to explain it.
Okay.
And speaking of feature plugins, early on in this dev cycle, maybe going back into the previous cycle, I was pretty vocal on observing the feature as plugins first system sort of was like broken because there didn't seem to be a shepherd to sort of bring everybody, make sure everybody was on pace, on par, had a vision, and everybody was going towards that vision to where you could easily merge them in the core. Right. And I gotta give you props because it looks like you've sort of been able to sort of write the system or put the features as plugin system back on track at least a good bit. Maybe speak on that, on the organization of the features as plugins first. And because some of them were developed, you know, during that release cycle and then immediately merged in, where I think a lot of us would like to see them maybe develop for one release cycle so that they're prepped for the next.
Are you talking about stuff that was developed during 4.2 and merged into 4.2?
Or just, yeah, either that or sometimes that happened in 4.1, but
well, and see
just,
the,
sort of, just sort of your take on the process overall, what you've either done in this cycle or what you'd like to see done to sort of improve this whole process of feature plugins.
Well, I think we've gotten a pretty good handle on it, and actually, you know, I need to give mad props to Sam Sidler again, because he really sort of took hold of the feature plugin organization process and really sort of tried to introduce some structure to it. You know, he's the one who maintains the table that's on the core development blog that has all the list of all the feature plugins and who's maintaining it and what status it is and all that stuff. He maintains that. But he also helps to run the sort of release, every release chat that they have to try to figure out like what's being proposed, what's being worked on, what's ready for core consideration. I think that we've really gotten sort of a handle on how that's supposed to work, and we really just need to sort of document it, honestly. I don't think it's for lack of trying. I think it's just maybe we don't have adequate documentation to sort of figure out how this is supposed to work. But to sort of address your point on some things that were sort of being developed versus things that were in development during, say, like 4.2, sometimes you have things that aren't really strictly feature plugins and can't really strictly be developed as feature plugins, right? So, for instance, Shiny Updates is an example of that. It, you know, it touches so much of the internals of WordPress that we decided to do something that's called trunk development, and that's essentially where we had sort of a merge candidate, and we just, like, merged it into trunk and then worked on it in trunk. Versus, for instance, we had, you know, two feature plugins that we were specifically working on in 4.2, the theme switcher and the Press This revamp. And in that case, you know, they were running plugins on GitHub. I think both teams were running plugins on GitHub, and they were iterating there. And then Dion Hulse set up a script to sort of... So they were developing on GitHub, right? And then they set up this script to, like, update their plugins every night on WordPress.org, which people could then download and run on their beta sites or whatever. And that was amazing.
Right? Yeah, which even that was a major change, because for the longest time, there's this tab, if you look on management page, there's this tab called beta testing, and you could see some of the feature plugins being worked on, and some of them said they weren't updated for 3 months or so.
Yep.
Yet if you looked on their GitHub counterparts, you could tell active development was taking place.
Well, yeah, and so that's a change, is that we sort of introduced a better flow of code from, say, GitHub to people's testing sites was a big one. I think part of it, too, was, and I will personally take credit for this, was that before 4.2, sort of the standard process for merging feature plugins was to basically find a core mentor to help with the merge process, right? Essentially turning a plugin into a patch, which then gets committed. And so I decided to try a little experiment, and that was to come up with two willing core mentors who ended up being Mark Jakewith and Andrew Oz. And I asked them to start working with the feature plugin teams like far in advance of the feature deadline, or the merge deadline, like, you know, probably a month in advance. And we found that, you know, some things about that worked and some things didn't work, but for the most part, it really helped them make decisions in what we like to call the core way, the WordPress core way, so that there would have been less adjustment after the fact, right? Like, that's the biggest slowdown during the merge process is basically taking somebody's plugin that was developed in their own style and sort of making it into something that we can merge into core. And so the way we shifted that was to say, we're going to develop it in the core way so that when we get to merge, we pretty much just have to make a decision about whether we think it's ready or not, right? But if it's not ready, then you can just keep going in that same sort of linear line, and down the road it'll be core ready when it's time to merge. So I think that was really successful, you know. Having Andrew Oz sort of in place to shepherd the Press This plugin was amazing. You know, because when we got to the merge point, it was literally just like, okay, make a patch, and we'll commit it.
What were some of the early reactions to the revival of Press This? I mean, did half of the room go, no one uses that, or the other half going, well, there's a reason why, and that's because we need to make it better? I mean, what was the chatter about Press This going into this development cycle?
Well, the two people that we knew that used it expressed concern with changing it because they use it all the time. I'm not going to name names, but I think initially, I don't really remember there being a great deal of people going, you know, why are you doing that? Like, just let it die or whatever. I think a lot of people sort of realized that it was sort of an area of core that had been left to die, right?
Yeah.
It was not extensible, really, in any kind of sense of the word. And it was really outdated looking, and it really hadn't been touched in quite a long time. And I think, you know, Michael, the feature lead, Michael Arstad, for Press This, I think in his own eyes, he sort of saw it as a sort of an extension of improving the mobile experience in WordPress, you know, because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't like using the mobile apps. In fact, I mean, tons of people don't like using the mobile apps because they don't support all kinds of things, right? And I think he viewed Press This as being a new mobile portal into using WordPress. And I think it absolutely is. You know, the mobile experience is just, you know, a thousand times exponentially better than it was before. So I don't really remember getting a lot of pushback. I think a lot of people didn't really understand why they were doing it. But in the end, I think we ended up with something that's really great, and I think we also managed to educate a lot of people about what it is and what it's for, as well as, I mean, I think just like, and you've probably seen a lot of this with like the JSON REST API, I've seen a lot of people talking about what it could be now, whereas before they weren't even talking about it at all, and now they're talking about, oh, hey, I could use it for this. So maybe in 4.3 I'll submit a patch and we'll make it work with other post types, or we'll add featured image support, or we'll add taxonomy support, or whatever. You know, I think that's an encouraging sign to see people are getting excited about areas of WordPress that had been left to die.
Me, I raised my hand. Did you? I don't know. I don't know if you did you read the post on WP Tavern I did on my review of PressThis, of revamped PressThis?
I have. I think I admitted to Jeff a couple of weeks ago that I.
It's probably better off doing it. Yeah.
Not been reading anything related to 4.2 during the cycle. I'm in a bubble.
So
I'll have to go back and read it all afterward.
So the initial point of the post is A, I'm excited now about PressThis. It's something I think I will use. And B, because it's an API powered application, and if those who use it, it doesn't even look like the standard WordPress editor. It's a totally new experimental type of way to create content in WordPress, and it's a method that I actually like and prefer. So what I'm hoping is that when they build in the site switcher and the ability to add a featured image, which is not in the current version yet, I think it'll be in a future version, that it will turn into this sort of third, sort of like a third-party post editor, except it would be tightly integrated into WordPress, so I don't have to log into the back end to create a post and manage it. I can create this, with the bookmarklet. I can go right there in a new window. It's all right there. It's simple. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. And you still have to log in, but that's what I'm looking for to get out of PressThis, and I'm excited for it to see what happens, what it turns into, because it's an API-based sort of portion of WordPress.
Well, and I think that's part of sort of Michael's plan in the long, he's looking at the long game, and they're already planning like improvements for it following 4.2, things that we didn't get to, things that they didn't have time for, whatever. I think he's really looking forward to like when the JSON REST API is integrated with core, with, switching over to use that instead to making it more agile. I think he's looking forward to integrating sort of multi-site things where you could just change the site that you're posting to.
Yes.
I think in its current revamped form, I kind of consider it to be a quick draft on steroids, right? I mean, I use it to write blog posts now, whereas before I would just like open I'd have to log into my site, which is kind of slow. I mean, whatever there, right? Site's a little slow. I have to go to the new post form, whatever. Now I just use PressThis. It's just easier.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. Like, PressThis can turn in the ultimate quick, easy to use, get to the post editor desktop application for WordPress.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. And I will tell you, Marcus asked about feedback. When I wrote about it and I spread the word about it's being revamped, of course I heard the usual, "Ooh, that should be in a plugin. That should be ripped out and put into a plugin. Why is that there?" So, I don't know, that's some of the feedback I got outside of, I really like the changes that are going to impress this. I might actually use it now. So there's like two different sides of the story there.
Well, and the sharing feature was, so, all right, when I was talking about using it to write blog posts or whatever, I'm using it as like I'm directly visiting it. And you were talking about the sharing features, for instance, right? Like we're using the bookmarklet.
Mm-hmm.
They improved the scanner quite a bit in terms of like being able to find media and finding videos and whatever from all these different services. And I really have to give sort of mad props to Stefan Dari and Andrew Oz, because they added this. It's just the littlest thing. Like, we were iterating on PressThis, and we got a video, I think actually from Matt Mullenweg, where he, did sort of a screencast and like, this is what I like about it, or this is what I don't like about it. And the thing that we noticed is that every time he shared content, the first thing he did was click on the media, whatever, to insert it, right, into the editor in PressThis.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this conversation with Stefan, and it was like, what if we just like auto-embedded the media? So you share, isn't that how you would expect it to work, right? You like share a video from YouTube or whatever, and just mm-hmm. it like just embeds the thing in there for you, because that's what you're going to do anyway. So you might as well just have it do it for you. And that one little thing just, I think, changed everything, because now it's just, you know, now you share a TED Talk or you share a YouTube video or whatever, and it just embeds the thing in there. It's amazing.
And Marcus and I talked about it, the feature, a few weeks ago. And one of the coolest things I found about it is when you select an image, when there's different images to select, when you save the post as a draft or you publish it, that image will automatically be uploaded into your media library in order to use that version instead of hot linking to the other site. And that's a big change.
Slick, don't you think?
Yeah.
They put a lot of work into that. I think it really turned out well.
So outside of that, I can't wait to see 4.2 tomorrow. Drew, I think you've done an excellent job. I applaud you. And I also want to go on the record as saying that you are one of the first WordPress developers, core developers that have led a release cycle that has actually kept the media informed. The media being me, because I contributed to WP Tavern. And I want to tell you on air that I very much appreciate you sort of giving me a heads up, telling me what's going on, keeping me in the loop. And like I said, I very much appreciate that. And if you could spread the word to the other leads, that would be awesome.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Constantine Openland a couple weeks ago, and he was, of course, asking me about tips that I could give him. And he's trying to get me to write a blog post about running a release. I'm not sure I want to do that, but I mean, I learned a lot of lessons, and we tried a lot of experiments. Some things failed, some things were successful. And I just hope that other release leads coming after me can sort of pick up the ball and run with it a little bit.
Awesome. So Marcus, any follow-up questions here before we dive into the news?
No, that actually was kind of one of my last questions, was what kind of tips and things would you give others that do other releases, but I think you've kind of covered that ground. But I for one, am very much looking forward to this release. I'm looking forward to implementing and using Press This on all the different platforms that I engage WordPress in. And I just, I want to thank you personally for your contribution and your help in the new release, and I really look forward to looking at some of the new features.
Awesome.
I do have one last question for you. It's a two-parter.
Okay.
And that is, over the past few releases, there have been quite a few posts, and I've read quite a few comments from people that say, what is going on here? There's so many other things the team could be working on. Why is every release seem to be so underwhelming? And B, as a release lead, if you get around to reading stuff like that, how does that affect you emotionally? And do you even agree with that it's these releases are underwhelming?
I think every release is going to have some things that people don't like. I mean, you can't please all the people all the time, right?
Right.
I think there is an inkling of truth to the idea that, the only things that get added are things that developers are willing to work on. I think that, we've been working on that a little bit, on trying to sort of, rather than working on more like pet projects, trying to think in terms of the broader picture, in terms of long-term or the longevity of WordPress. So I think there's a little bit less of that going on, probably in the last couple of releases, where we're picking things that, we're only doing this because I want to work on it, right? Versus we're doing this because we need to do it. I think it ends up being that you do the things you need to do before the things you want to do is where we're going. So in terms of this idea of running underwhelming releases, I mean, I think moving to the faster release cycle, we're running releases that are three and a half months long, right? Three releases a year, whereas releases used to be 6 months, in some cases even longer than that. I think iterating at this speed means that, in a way, releases will become more underwhelming, but I think at the same time, the goal, I think, would be to eventually get to the point where releases are not an event. Releases are just constantly happening, right? automatically.
Man, it almost sounds like Nason speaking to me. That's pretty much the mentality Andrew Nason has.
Well, and it's honestly, I think that's the way to go. I think we're headed there. I think we're headed to the point where a release is not going to be an event. It's just going to be it's going to be a rolling event, but it's not going to be like, oh my gosh, I can't wait until April 23rd for 4.2 because I didn't even know that a release was coming out. I just know that features appeared, or I got a notice that something new is coming, and I have it. Like, and I don't have to do anything. I think we're getting there to the point where we're iterating fast enough that it's not going to be as an event as it has been in the past.
And do you think part of the way of how we're going to get there is automatic updates for core, you know, not just maintenance releases, but for major releases as well?
I think we all like to think eventually we'll get to that point. I mean, when was the last? I mean, I love asking people, when was the last time you updated Chrome?
Boy, I knew that was coming.
Yeah, the Chrome thing.
I mean, it's at the same time, I think for big changes, you know, that maybe it needs to be kind of an event because you don't really want to blindside people, right? I can tell you for a fact, for instance, that before my blog runs on Trunk, and before it ran on Trunk, I had major releases turned on because I had that much faith in major releases that they wouldn't break anything. So I don't know. I mean, I think we're eventually going to get there, but it's not anytime soon.
So WordPress updating, it's going to get to the point where it's like updating the plugin. When you update it, you get a README, see changes, and you go on about your day. Yay!
Yeah, I think we may even see going to shorter release cycles even than 3 months. You know, I think the last 4 or 5 releases, we've averaged something like 600 or 700 tickets a release. I think we're going to see releases get chopped down even more to maybe a month and a half or 2 months. I mean...
And I guess looking at the scope of things, the breadth of WordPress and how many websites it's powering and everything else, I mean, to hear the development time and what's going on underneath it all and to increase, so sort of hear you talk about increase the release cycle, I mean, that is, I don't know what to, I guess it's impressive, I guess.
Well, in a way, I mean, the other thing you have to think about is a lot of people don't consider how much time we spend testing, right? So... I mean, in this release cycle, we spent basically a month in beta, and then we've done 4 RCs, 2 of which were this week, so we've been on RC for, say, 2.5 weeks. We did more than a month, basically a month and a half of testing. That means that half of the 3-month release cycle was just testing, right? So that meant that, and honestly, that's sort of what it boils down to is finding the balance between development and testing time, right?
Well, you know what's going to happen. 4.2 is going to release, and 5 minutes later, someone's going to update and say their site broke. Why didn't you test this more?
That's inevitable. I mean,
I know. Just because you can't test for every variable, for every operating system and server set up out there. I mean, it just happens. But, I mean, that's just the nature of software development.
The best advice I can give anyone is deactivate all your plugins before you update WordPress.
And back up. That helps too.
And back up. I mean, obviously back up your site because that's just, I don't know, I consider that a given. But maybe not. I mean,
well, if you saw some statistics from a few weeks ago based on backups and software, it's obviously not very important to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I have been guilty of that, of not backing up my site. I think... Backing up your data first and foremost is the most important, right? Back up your data, and then honestly, just deactivate all your plugins, because half the time when something white screens or breaks, it's a plugin that's causing it. So just save yourself the hassle and just deactivate plugins, and then after updating, if everything went smoothly, then activate them one at a time and see if something breaks. And if it doesn't, then you're great. You're golden.
Sound advice.
And the other advice is that when you upgrade to any version of WordPress and you experience an issue, especially if the update was just recently released, there's an army of volunteers that staff the forum, and they're ready it's almost like a given where there's a bunch of knowledgeable volunteers, forum moderators that will stand by on the forum and they'll try and help you out immediately. And whatever issues that come up that they see are commonalities get passed on to the core team. And if need be, the dev team will actually release a point release or a maintenance release, right?
Yeah. You know, and there's a Mika Epstein-Ipstenu, every time there's a release, she authors, or somebody on the support team authors, what they call the OMG WTF BBQ post. And that is sort of like the common plugin and theme issues that have been reported following a major release. And that's usually stickied in the forums. And absolutely, I mean, the best advice I can give people is if you're going to ask for support, just remember that the volunteers are volunteers, and I guarantee you they are all very nice people. So please be nice. They're there to help you. And you were asking about a point release, Jeff. Yeah, I mean, I think typically we try to not do point releases right away, unless it's some kind of serious pressing bug, right? I think usually we try to leave a little bit of a grace period between a major release and a minor release, unless there's some kind of huge thing that has to be fixed right now.
Awesome. So, man, this is all great stuff. Like I said, can't wait for 4.2 tomorrow. But we do have some news to get through really quick. And since you're on the line here, I do want to talk about a big thing that happened earlier this week. There is an cross-site scripting vulnerability that affected more than a dozen popular plugins. And, in fact, if I wanted to go out on a limb, I'd say it affects well over 50 plugins, if not a lot more than that.
Uh-huh.
And what happened here is that a security firm, Securi, worked with the WordPress core security team, and Joost de Valk was involved as well. And there's a vulnerability that stemmed from the improper use of the add query argument and remove query argument functions based on inaccurate information that was within the WordPress codex, which led many developers to assume those functions would properly escape user input. Now, some of this stuff may be going over my listeners' heads, and I totally understand. But the thing I want to point out here that I think I find a little bit fascinating is that the Codex pages were created in 2009, but only earlier this year, Samuel Otto Wood actually updated those pages to include information on using escape_URL. So there was a number of years there where that improper information was documented, and it turns out that quite a few plugins were using those functions unknowingly, knowing that possibly could have caused a security vulnerability. So just a major coordinated effort on, I believe it was Monday, and several plugins pushed out automatic updates and to address the issue. So it was really cool that so many people came together with a coordinated effort and pushed this out to make sure
absolutely
that sites were as safe as possible. But what, you being the release lead, were you in on this? Did you know what was going on?
I was in the room. It was coordinated over the weekend. So, you know, it was planned for Monday, but we'd been sort of working through it and figuring out logistically who was going to be opting into auto updates and who wouldn't I think probably a couple days in advance. Obviously it was very much a coordinated effort. We wanted to make sure that disclosure was sort of handled, you know, I don't know. It was already being handled responsibly. I think we just wanted to make sure it was a coordinated message, so you didn't end up with this sort of like panic mode where people are like, you know, we wanted to give as many plugins as possible the opportunity to update in advance before it was announced.
Right.
In the short time frame that was set, you know, and Gary Pendergast and Dion Holst did an amazing job getting all that coordinated.
Yeah, as I understand it, those two gentlemen didn't get very much sleep that weekend.
Yeah, they are both Australian and living in Australia, and they were running they were coordinating the effort at, you know, like 11 a.m. Eastern time, and they're like 18 hours ahead, so, you know, 3 in the morning.
So the WordPress Codex, for the longest time, all of all these years of WordPress's existence, has been like sort of the go-to source that I and several other people say, this is where you go to learn about WordPress and functions and examples. Although in many instances, we say with the caveat that it's a wiki, it's maintained, it could be updated, it could be changed, it might not be totally accurate. But as someone who has worked with inline documentation and realizing the importance of documentation, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, just this incorrect, this little error that was on the codex there for years, causing potentially this issue here, you know, 5-6 years later?
Well, you know, I think it's really indicative of what the codex is. It's probably the best way to describe it is, you know, you say that it is, anyone can edit it. But I think the better way to think about it is anyone can edit it and some people don't edit it, right? So you end up with, you know, what we ended up with in the codex in terms of function references and class and hook and API references was basically this mass of unmaintainable documentation. You know, I mean, people can go years without editing. I mean, as you saw with that, with those two articles, people can go years without editing a single article. I think in terms of that one, it just, the original documentation wasn't very good, and I'm not necessarily blaming the person that wrote it. It's more just like, I think honestly, it just slipped through the cracks. You know, and I think
the fascinating part about that too is that Mike Jolly, who is a lead developer for WooThemes, published a post on his blog in 2013 mm-hmm. on WordPress's URL manipulation functions, and he specifically mentioned the add query argument and remove query argument and how you should echo escape, you should escape everything.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put this on him. It's not his fault that he didn't go and update the Codex article. But, you know, had he done so, you know, maybe it might have been a little less severe.
Well, you know, today. And I agree knows? With you. I don't think it's necessarily on him to do it. I think it's everyone's responsibility to support, sort of be on top of it.
Well, I imagine that was the end goal, to have a wiki. Let's, you know, a group effort here, crowdsource this documentation and effort on the wiki. I mean, that was probably the golden idea, just hasn't turned out that way.
Well, and honestly, I think that's largely why we've moved to using a code reference, which is partially parsed from the WordPress source. In fact, I'm actually writing a blog post about this right now in response to a post status article. It's basically like, you know, with the code reference, what we get essentially is, I like to think of it as getting stuff for free, right? The problem that we have with the codex is everything is manually curated. Everything is manually edited and added. When a new page is created, it's created manually, right? And in the code reference, we get a lot of stuff for free. We get a lot, we're parsing the WordPress source code, and we get a whole bunch of documentation for free from the source code, right? And then on top of that, we add in manually curated information, like usage information, or in the case of where the bad information was in those codex articles, it was in the examples, right? So with the code reference, what we decided to do was to make there be a moderation step in submitting examples, right? Because one of the biggest complaints we got in the codex survey that we ran 2 years ago was that the examples were bad or incorrect or, you know, whatever, or just plain old not there. And so sort of how we took that was that there should be a moderation step. So now when people submit what we call user-contributed notes on the code reference, those have to be vetted before they're approved. So, and there's like, you know, I don't know how many people are on that list, and it's a pretty small list right now. But when somebody submits one of those user-contributed notes, you know, it's usually me or one of the other people who has access reading that, fixing it if necessary, and then publishing it. And then even then, those can be community moderated. You know, people can up and downvote them, just like on, just like answers on Stack Exchange. So I think in a way, if those had been submitted through the code reference, then we would have caught that. But this, again, we're in the process of moving function references from the codex to the code reference in terms of moving examples and other useful information. and we have to do them one at a time, and there's not a big team doing it, and we just haven't gotten to that one. So it's nice. It was on the list, and we hadn't gotten to it yet. So what happened was, you know, Brian Kreisgard commented on the fact that we had redirected the codex pages to the code reference.
Yes.
And that's because what we did was we copied over the examples and we fixed them when we did it, and then we redirected the codex pages so that when people visited, they would get the correct examples with escaping advice in them.
And for those wondering, the resource you're talking about is actually developer.wordpress.org, yeah. Correct?
Yeah, I probably should have said that, but it's essentially going to replace the function, class, hook, and API references that are currently in the codex.
And I imagine at some point, probably the overall goal for this, and who knows how many years it is in the making, but there may be a time where the codex gets archived or placed in archive mode, and this will be the de facto place to get all your developer information from WordPress, right?
We are largely moving most of that content out of the codex, yes.
Okay, cool. So everyone who wants to know out there, as many people as I've talked to, they have said that there's no evidence that this was being exploited in mass or that they had any evidence. So that's good news. But if anybody out there has a plugin that needs an update, please update as soon as possible, because chances are it covers this vulnerability. And if you've purchased any items on Code Canyon or ThemeForest, which are the WordPress marketplaces for themes and plugins on Envato, their marketplaces, also keep a lookout for updates for those products as well. They're currently in the process of evaluating all of their WordPress items to determine which ones use the code and trying to get with item authors to update them. And they don't necessarily have the same type of automatic update system that the WordPress directories have and WordPress users have, so it requires a little more effort on the user's part, a little more diligence to maintain and keep updated. So if you have any items from ThemeForest or Code Canyon, definitely make sure to check for updates and update as soon as possible, just to keep yourself protected from this annoying potential vulnerability based on, you know, how the code was used, how that function was used. So outside of that, there was yet another, and this one is completely, this security update is completely separate from the plugin issue, which is WordPress 4.1.2, released on April 21st on Tuesday, and this one was actually considered a critical security release. So it actually fixed one high-risk security vulnerability, three medium to low-risk, and the last four were added just for hardening, to make it tougher to exploit or get involved with WordPress. And one of the issues here with this critical release, Drew, and you may know what caused this, this anomaly where people received a notification to update to 4.2.1, but there were two update now buttons and two download buttons. Apparently that was due to an unfortunate bug from what I read.
I don't know too much about it. I think, as I recall, what happened there was there was a bug with the updater in 4.1 that had to be sort of retroactively fixed. And so the double update button was a result of that.
Oh, okay.
And it was sort of like the middle ground of just saying, you know, just use the 4.1.2 update button and it'll all reset. It was sort of an unfortunate bug that was discovered after 4.1 was released, and they sort of backported it to the live release package, and then I think that's why, you know. So if you get that, just update to 4.1.2 and it'll go away.
Or just wait till tomorrow and 4.2.
Or just wait till tomorrow and update to 4.2. But I wouldn't wait. I mean, honestly, I would do that. If you haven't updated to 4.1.2 yet, I would absolutely do that first.
Nice. Yes. So the last time WordPress had a critical security update, it was actually 4.0.1, released in late 2014. So it's been a few months, but these don't come around all that often, so that's good news.
Uh-huh.
So one last story here before we wrap it up. We get to Marcus Couch's plugin picks of the week, is that Facebook has abandoned its official WordPress plugin, Sad Trombone.
Who cares?
So the official Facebook plugin for WordPress, which was launched in 2012 and apparently is active on more than 200,000 websites, is defunct. It's been abandoned. Apparently, the Facebook for WordPress tool is officially supported on WordPress.com VIP, but they will not contribute to the one on the directory. That's what it says. So pretty much the plugin's just going to sit there. There are other alternatives to
way better alternatives, I might add. This plugin sucked.
And well, maybe that could be a pick for give us a pick. Well, not next week, maybe the week after.
Yeah.
However, I did notice that a lot of people were complaining that the plugin A did suck and B, working with the API was just a disaster, the Facebook API. So
yeah,
so it's there's terrible. That. So if you are using the official Facebook plugin, stop, because it's no longer supported. Go look for a better alternative, which Marcus says exists, and I believe him.
What is it? What is this magical alternative?
There's Social by Alex King is a good one.
Yeah, hey, I know that guy.
I talked about Facebook Comments DB a couple weeks back, where it actually takes all your comments and hooks it right into your WordPress database, so they become native comments. So those are good alternatives, but I'm not a proponent of mating and hybriding WordPress and Facebook together. Two separate animals.
I'm not sure what the Facebook plugin allowed you to do, but I'm looking at some of the Facebook alternatives here based on the search, and there's quite a few of them that have 4- and 5-star reviews. So there's plenty of
There were great Facebook plugins before Facebook even got into the plugin game. So it's just window dressing as far as I'm concerned.
Awesome. So that's going to wrap it up for, I mean, we're running out of time here. There's obviously some other stuff we could talk about, but we'll get down into a rabbit hole we won't get out of. So, Marcus, why don't you give us your plugin picks of the week?
You got it. Well, one thing, Jeff, that you may note when you do a Google search is sometimes you will see reviews of specific things, and it has star ratings on it. Well, this plugin called ComStick Star Rating actually allows you to enter in specific star ratings or have users do that, and then it actually displays that in Google search. So it includes all of the different functionalities that are required by Google in order to display those star ratings. So if you're looking for a good way to boost specific pages or posts or products within your store or website, check out this plugin. It is called ComStick Star Rating. And next is Employee Spotlight. Now, there are a ton of different employee and staff plugins out there, but this one is actually really nice because it allows you to do kind of columnized presentations of your staff. And then the spotlight part comes in when they click on that particular person, and it gives them their own page within WordPress. And within that page, you can do cool things like embed their Twitter feed or any other relevant social posting that they happen to do. It does full short code functionality within an editor, so there's really no limit to what you can do. I recently used this one for a client site in which they had over 20 different employees, and this one worked quite well. Rather than having to just have a different post or a page related to that employee, it did it through this plugin and a nice custom post type. So check it out. Employee Spotlight, completely responsive and adjusts all the way to different device screens and things as far as showing off your staff. So it's a handy little tool. It's called Employee Spotlight.
I can see this being used on a website like TenUp's website, where they have over 100 employees. Instead of Employee of the Month, they just use this plugin to highlight an employee.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, this is an interesting plugin that I've tried out. It's called Web Push Notifications. And so what this does is, if you're in a Chrome browser, this one, I think it also works in Safari, where somebody will go to your site and it'll have a little pop-up that says, would you like to get push notifications as far as when new content is available on this site? And you can click yes, and it adds a little add-in to your browser. And then, lo and behold, next time you push a notification out, it informs people within their browser that you've got new content. So it's a handy little way that doesn't necessarily have to go through mobile or any of those specific devices. It hits you right on the desktop. So I thought it was handy and definitely worth checking into. It's called Web Push Notifications, and those are my plug-in picks of the week.
And you mentioned notifications. I know 10Up actually has a commercial product slash service that does the push-up notifications. And on this plugin, I just want to make sure that people know that it supports all versions of Chrome and Safari 7 and higher. There's not really anything out there for Firefox just yet. And I'm not sure if that's an OS. I think that might be an OS level type feature. I don't know if it's a browser-based feature yet.
Yeah. It's as far as I know, it's OS X.
Ah, okay. So that would explain it. So before we get eaten up by the dogs over there at Drew James's house, Drew, thanks a lot. Thanks again for coming on the show. All the best to you. Yeah. And congrats on getting through. You're still alive to lead another release down the road if you choose to do that.
I'm game. Let's do it.
Awesome. So you can catch show notes for this episode and every other episode on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro. That's JeffFR0, Marcus.
You can find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, and on Twitter, at MarcusCouch.
And before we wrap it up here, I want to let everyone know that next Wednesday, which would be April 29th, we're going to do a first here on WordPress Weekly. I'm actually going to do a Women in WordPress Roundtable. So it's going to feature Jennifer Bourne, Carrie Dills, and Rebecca Gill. And we're just going to sit back and we're going to talk about the women in tech, women in WordPress, and who knows where that show is going to go. But I'm very much looking forward to it. So hope you are too.
That's going to be a great show. I will be off next week for the very first time. I'm going to be actually taking care of my woman in WordPress, which is my wife, Barbara, who it's her birthday and also our anniversary. So I've got to take that day off.
Two of the best excuses ever. I'll approve that. So everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you again next Wednesday evening. Take care.